Hi guys, and welcome to our chat today on menopause. We are joined with Dawny, and Kez is here today as part of the hosting team of Diabetes Chat. Hello, Dawny. Welcome to Diabetes Chat.
Hi there. Thanks for asking me along.
Thank you so much. So we're going to talk, obviously, about this very important topic of menopause. But before we do that, I think it'd be nice to talk a little bit about you and your journey with diabetes. So could you maybe share the next couple of minutes about you? Tell us a little bit about you and your life when you were diagnosed with diabetes, maybe the symptoms you had and the journey you've had on what you've used over the years.
Okay, so yeah, my name's obviously Dawny. I was diagnosed with type 1 Easter in my final year at Stromilis University College down in Belfast. My diagnosis came about as a result of my then boyfriend, my husband, suddenly realizing that I had lost a ridiculous amount of weight in a very short period of time. I was drinking so much water, it was unbelievable. Running to the bathroom, very dehydrated, incredibly sleepy. And he picked me up from the plane. I'd come back from a weekend in Sheffield. And when he picked me up from the plane, he said, "Have you been drinking whiskey?" I was like, "No." His friend had been diagnosed with type 1 whenever they were at primary school. He remembered the smell of ketones from his friend's breath prior to his friend's diagnosis. So, ended up in hospital the next day for a week and with the news that I had type 1 diabetes. When I was told about pregnancy, that was really hard hitting, and then I was told that I probably wouldn't live long enough to even see menopause.
Wow.
So that kind of meant that conversation was closed, shut down at the point of diagnosis. So I have now lived with type 1 for 30 years. I have 4 healthy children, so the pregnancy stuff worked out well. And I went back after working as a teacher for 13 years, I went back and retrained as a midwife. So I've been working as a midwife for the past 13 years, and I'm also completing a PhD.
Wow. So, wow, what a career you've had and bringing up your 4 amazing boys. So what about the sort of things you've used over the years? So I guess, did you start with finger pricking, and then tell us, go through that sort of journey that you've had over them 30 years?
So yeah, started off with finger pricking. Back in the day when the glucometer I had, you bled onto it, then you had to wipe the blood off it, then you put it into the glucometer. It took 2 minutes to give you a reading, and then you confirmed that the reading was accurate by checking the colour of the strip, like your urine test strips.
Yeah.
A blood bottle. I had injections to start with, and the sister in the ward was really excited. I think I'd been there maybe 3 days. A girl I was at school with was also diagnosed the same day as me, curiously enough. But she was so excited because insulin pens had just arrived in the ward. So we were allowed to use insulin pens for our short-acting insulin. And everybody was just like, "Whoa, this is so cool." And we were going, "Okay, this is different from the syringe. How does this work?" So that was quite an education for everybody involved. The insulin that I was on originally, one of them isn't even given to people anymore. It's used for the treatment of diabetes and animals, which is like so embarrassing. I just keep thinking, what the heck? Yeah, so I contributed to veterinary science from the early days of my diagnosis. And then a couple of years later, I managed to get an insulin pen for my long-acting insulin, which is the one they don't give to people anymore. Yes. And then I think I've had like 5 or 6 different, I think it's maybe 7 different types of insulin over the years. I then had faster acting glucometers, so going from 2 minutes down to 5 seconds with the Libre was just amazing. Whenever I had the One Touch test strips, and in 2016 I started using Freestyle Libre. I've been given an insulin pump in 2012, and just this past week I got my new insulin pump, and I'm really excited about that, because I've been using Android APS for the last 3 years. And the new pump that I have just connects automatically. So, yeah, it's been a bit of a rush through technology systems, but I've been really lucky because I would be quite active in the online community, and I see people posting about new tech and people hear conversations. It's meant that whenever I go to an appointment with my consultant, I can ask about the new tech. And I don't think I could do that if I didn't know that the stuff existed. If I wasn't active on social media, I wouldn't even know.
You wouldn't know. Yeah. So peer support has played a big part over the years.
A massive part, yeah. Absolutely massive. Because, say, when I was diagnosed, I had a person that I knew, which was great. But then we moved to different parts of the country, and I didn't have anybody then until about 2006 when I did Daphne. Yeah. And from 2015, I've been able to feel very much initially like a part of the GB doc. And then from the GB doc, I found the folk within NI doc, which was great. Yeah. And it's just grown from there. So I have this whole extended family that I never imagined ever having whenever I was in that hospital bed back in 1993.
Oh, that's lovely to hear. So why don't you tell us a little bit about menopause? Because today we're going to be talking about menopause as our main topic. What is menopause? And could you maybe explain the stages of menopause?
So menopause is a wee bit like puberty in reverse. Menopause itself is actually just one day. And that's the day whenever you've had 365 or 366 full days from your last menstrual period.
Right.
So we use the term menopause regularly as if it covers that entire life stage. But if you were to mark it on your calendar, it's one single day.
Yes.
Almost like your diagnosis of diabetes day.
Good
analogy.
So do you have a menopause anniversary? Diversity? Yeah, I can't even.
I don't know. I haven't reached that stage yet. So
no.
Another
opportunity to celebrate with some cake, I think, Dawny.
But perimenopause would be that time leading up to that one day.
Yeah.
So,
and how long does that last? Or is it vary between people?
It can last anything between 5 and 15 years.
Wow.
And I think for any of us who are likely to ever experience perimenopause, menopause, it's worth having conversations with your female family members to see what age they started to notice symptoms of perimenopause, which can include things like tiredness, brain fog, can include those hot sweats, dry, itchy skin, nails breaking, mood swings. Quite often, perimenopause gets treated as a form of depression, but when people are given antidepressants for it, they don't work because it's not a depression, it's a hormonal chemical imbalance within your body. And antidepressants aren't going to fix that. It'd be like giving somebody antidepressants because they've been diagnosed with type 1 diabetes and not giving them insulin. You know, there's a lack of something. It's a change in hormone levels. But it's definitely worth talking to family members and seeing what's normal within your family circle, because I think a lot of us who live with type 1 in particular, we're told that we would have an earlier menopause than people who don't have type 1.
Right.
And there's no research to back that up. So where that statement ever came from is very, very questionable.
Yeah.
But talking to friends within the type 1 community, speaking to friends outside of the type 1 community as well, friends who don't have any type of diabetes, everybody reports very similar symptoms. But for those of us living with diabetes of any sort, the biggest change that we notice is in our blood glucose levels. And for any of the folk who menstruate regularly.
Yes.
For years, we've been saying, pre-period, my blood glucose levels are different from what they are post-period. Why is that? And you just met with blank looks quite often. Clinicians don't know how to explain it. They don't seem to have a rationale or an understanding. And it's been really good seeing those conversations start to open up at conferences, online, in research articles. So say perimenopause itself, it can be anything 15 years before you actually have that one day where you can say, I have not had a period now for a full calendar year. Yeah. I am officially in menopause.
So what is the difference between menopause and postmenopause?
So postmenopause is when you have no further periods at all. That's it. Right. Your reproductive cycles have come to an end.
Yeah.
And one of the things that obstetricians, gynecologists, women's health medics would talk about, but if you have bleeding at any point after that 1 year anniversary, mm-hmm. you should go and get an investigation with a gynecologist, because it can be a sign of something else going on within your body. It can be a sign of something abnormal that needs investigated.
Absolutely. No, that's great advice there, Dawny. So just before we hand over to our lived experience panel that we've got this evening, could you maybe explain a little bit about the community? Why did you set it up just share with us about it, please?
Well, a number of us had been talking with it online and then on various WhatsApp chat groups. And when we met up in real life, which, you know, we like to do whenever we live with type one, catch up with our peers.
Cool.
And it wasn't actually me who set up the group. It was Beth. So Beth had messaged me and had said, "What do you think?" And I went, "That would be a fantastic idea." So Beth is she's a real powerhouse, actually, within the support network that we've had, because she launched the Menopause Mother group on Diabetes Day, mm-hmm. 14th of November. Mm-hmm. And that was literally hot on the heels of a menopause week long celebration of events. So, you know, could not say that it was all my idea. It wasn't. Beth totally took this and ran with it. Great. And I'm so grateful to her for managing to pull all of us together with our chaotic lifestyles, chaotic time zones, and get us into the same space where we could talk and share experiences much more readily.
Absolutely. And also you have a WhatsApp group as well, don't you, where you can just have them sort of informal discussions, but also like learn from each other and just connect and know that you've got other people who are going through the same sort of things or have been through it. It's just that nice opportunity to just talk offline as well, isn't it?
It is. And the WhatsApp group is obviously, because it's a WhatsApp group, other people who would be on Twitter are very welcome to come and join it. So it's simply a matter of sending a message request to myself, Beth, Shiv Gaffney, Alex, others who you would see contributing to the Menopause Mother page. But it's also a place where we can have conversations which aren't going to be hijacked by people with alternative agendas. The conversations that happen offline are quite often much more personal, and there's no medical advice. It isn't meant to be a medical support group, but it's where we go and we share our experiences of things that we have tried out or symptoms that we've experienced or issues that we've encountered as we've been journeying through this stage in our life. And that has been an amazing benefit as well. And again, it's lovely because we have women in the group from right across the globe, which means we're getting a full international perspective.
Yes.
But a lot of the advice and the information, the symptoms, particularly in relation to blood glucose levels and healthcare professional awareness, can be discussed in there safely.
Yes.
It's just a nice safe space to be.
No, that's great. So just to finish, Dawny, where can people contact you or the group, like you said, to see the Twitter group, but also to get on the WhatsApp? What can they do to reach out?
So if you search for @menopausemither, you'll find the Twitter page that we have, the account that we've set up. You can message the account directly, or you can message myself, you can message Beth, you can message Shiv. We're out there, and we've also been really fortunate that we've been able to link in with Sammy Edwards, who runs the Type 1 Diabetes Menopause and Perimenopause Facebook group. So again, there are a number of us who hang out there as well. So if Twitter isn't your preferred method of reaching social groups or getting information or getting advice, that's another really worthwhile group to have a look at, because the information that's posted there about study days that are coming up or information sessions quite often reflects what we have in the Twitter group. But there are additional things. You might find somebody in it who's actually like living in the same region as you that you'd be quite keen to link in with.
Connect up to, yeah. Brilliant stuff. So thank you for your time today, Dawny. And there you go, guys. We've caught with Dawny today. To get to know her a little bit, but also talk about menopause, which is a very important topic to talk about. So thank you, Dawny.
Thank you.
Hi, Dawny. Thanks for chatting to me today. I've just got a few questions to ask you about managing diabetes and the menopause, if that's okay.
Yeah, work away.
So the first question is there any support for women who are living with diabetes when it comes to going through the menopause?
So until about a year ago, it was very difficult to find any information. But one of the first things that I came across was a Facebook group, which is run by Sammy Edwards, and it's called Type 1 Diabetes, Menopause and Perimenopause. So it's run by Sammy and a team of other girls as well. And that's out there, say. It's available on Facebook. It's a closed group, so you have to answer some questions to be able to be accepted into the group. But it's not rocket science at all. It's very, very, very straightforward. And then on Twitter, we have the Menopause Mither Twitter page, which was very kindly set up by Beth, or inspiredly set up by Beth, following Menopause Day and World Diabetes Day back in November. And that's open to anybody. So even if you just want to watch quietly from the background, if you want to share any information about upcoming menopause cafes, events, online lectures, sessions, feel free to share those and tag at Menopause Mither in the tweet that you're sharing. And for a number of us then got together, again under Beth's leadership, and have a WhatsApp group, again called Menopause Mither. There's about 40 of us in there who find it's a safe place to come and talk to each other, share information, share experiences, share resources. And it's one of the places where we would regularly share information about upcoming sessions, real life meetups, events that we can attend online. And it's open to all of these events, and all of these platforms are open to anybody who's at any stage of their menopause journey. If you think that you're maybe entering perimenopause, if you want to know more about perimenopause, if you're postmenopausal, regardless of where you live in the world, it's a 24/7 accessible platform, and it's open to everybody.
That sounds great, thank you. So the next question is, and I suppose it's different for everyone, but what symptoms might be the most challenging when kind of managing diabetes and the menopause?
I think the biggest symptom that we've all experienced has been the fluctuations in blood glucose levels and hot sweats. So hot sweats happen generally about 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. And anybody who's lived with diabetes for any period of time knows that that's usually whenever those middle of the night hypos also hit. And that can be really unsettling, because you get up to treat a hypo, and certainly a number of us will just do an automatic check, treat hypo symptoms first and then check the numbers, because we know that there's a bit of a delay between taking a treatment and glucose levels registering what the number is actually. So middle of the night hypos, middle of the night hot sweats have been quite shocking because you think that you know what's going on and you don't. Trying to explain to our diabetes teams why HbA1c's maybe aren't sitting where they should be, trying to explain why time and range graphs or GMI is also not where it should be at in spite of having optimal therapy, can be very challenging, can be very difficult, and adds to that low mood. Again, those of us living with diabetes, there's about 70% of us who would have issues with mental health as a result of living with diabetes. It's not easy living with a chronic condition like this that takes so much time, so much input. Menopause just messes that up entirely because you suddenly find a loss of confidence, and you find that there's a sense of overwhelm. And every one of us who have come together and started chatting to each other have said about that things that we were really confident with 5 years ago are now a massive challenge, or can be a massive challenge, where you were maybe presenting to an audience or you were working closely with colleagues, even visiting family members, you get hit by a wave of overwhelm, and it's a struggle to step outside the house to contribute to a meeting and work, and you tend to withdraw backwards from that. And again, the close links with diabetes and knowing that that's something that can happen whenever you have a hypo. If you're not able to check your blood glucose, quite often you'll think it's something to do with your blood glucose levels. So that makes it very, very unsettling. The tiredness as well that goes with menopause and perimenopause is almost like a post-COVID infection or during COVID infection hit as well. So there's so many things that tie in, which you've kind of normalized whenever you live with diabetes. You think that you've got these things under control as much as you can have anything with diabetes under control. As I've said before, it's a feral condition in itself. Throw menopause into the mix and that feralness just goes out the window entirely. Everything that you had before as a resource slides and doesn't work as well as it would have done in the past. And I think that's where the peer support has really been so helpful, because you realise that you're not actually the only person struggling with erratic glucose levels. You're not the only person who's confusing hypos with hot flushes. You're not the only person who's suddenly lost confidence where before you were reasonably to very confident individual. You're a skilled worker, you're more than competent home runner, you were living your best life, and suddenly it just feels like that rug of safety has been pulled out from underneath you and you're in free fall.
I think that's really helpful to hear that, actually, because I don't think that's something that I would have thought about. I just would have become really frustrated about, like, why is this not working anymore? that's really helpful. Thank you. In terms of healthcare professionals, are they able to provide any advice and guidance around managing diabetes in the menopause?
Unfortunately, there isn't any recent research around diabetes and menopause. So a lot of our healthcare professionals haven't had the upskilling that we would be hoping for, or they don't have maybe the understanding of the impact on activities of daily living with regards to menopause. I know that whenever I had first flagged up symptoms of perimenopause with my own consultant, I was signposted to the TREM diabetes information leaflet. At that stage, it was an A4 leaflet printed on both sides. They've redesigned the information that they have available on Trend Diabetes UK website, and that's been a much more helpful resource. It's been a much more empathetic resource, but resources in themselves are quite limited because it gives suggestions. And I think whenever one of the symptoms of menopause and perimenopause is an increase in your waist size. So the decrease in estrogen, progesterone causes an accumulation of fat cells around your abdomen. And again, from the conversations that we've been having, most of us are now eating less in the way of calories than we would have been doing 10 years ago. Most of us are exercising more. We're, you know, we're now running after adolescent, teenage children. We're working longer hours in work because we've got children who don't require the same level of childminding. We've got older relatives who we're providing care in for. We're still doing all the things that we were doing. We're using less insulin and the weight still goes on. So insulin resistance is a big issue. And I know that a number of us have tried low carb diets. Some of us have tried keto diets. Some of us have tried whole grain, whole fruits, whole veg, whole food diets. They work to a point, but not as well as we would like them to. And whenever you're talking to your healthcare professional team about those things, they don't necessarily agree with some of the dietary choices that we've made. They don't necessarily understand why we're struggling with weight gain. There's that sense of not being believed by the people who are coordinating your access to resources, who are coordinating your overall healthcare. And that can be quite isolating, that it can be quite harmful at times, because you're reluctant to go to them and say, I've tried all these things, this is what I think it might be. And unfortunately, our clinicians aren't as upskilled as I said, sort of as we would like them to be. But the lack of research-based evidence out there to support what we're experiencing, to support what we're going through, is a big part of that as well. And when you Google diabetes, perimenopause, menopause, you find an awful lot of research papers which would say that simply going through perimenopause, menopause, can lead to women who had no history of diabetes developing type 2 diabetes. Trying to get type 1 specific information is the biggest challenge. A number of us, Gillian Kerr, myself, Siobhan Gaffney, and others, had done Google Scholar searches. We'd looked on ResearchGate. We'd gone through PubMed to try and find information that we could share within the WhatsApp group and share online. And the vast majority of the research was sitting from 2010 or prior to that. And again, it referenced the link between going through menopause and the chances of developing type 2 diabetes, which isn't overly helpful whenever you've been living with type 1 for a significant period of time and you're looking for type 1 specific information. And again, it just flags up the lack of awareness of other types of diabetes. So for folk going through MODY, for folk who have LADA, for folk who have cystic fibrosis related diabetes or steroid induced diabetes, or type 3C diabetes, for them there's even less information than there is for us living with type 1.
That's quite scary, really, considering the amount of people who are living with different types of diabetes and will go through this kind of, you know, will go into menopause and kind of have to deal with that. So my last question is, if you could recommend anything to make managing diabetes and the menopause easier, what would it be?
Find your community. It always comes back to community, I think, within diabetes. Reach out to the people who are speaking about menopause. Start doing the Google searches. Start checking into the social media groups. Start asking questions. Because that sense of validation that you're not the only person is such a strong and potent tool in itself. And when we bond together as a community, there's more power in a number of voices joining together than there is in one person. Because if you go in and you ask a question and you're with a meeting with your healthcare professional and they say, oh no, that's not a thing, it leaves you so deflated. But whenever you have other voices behind you, whenever you have other folks supporting you, validating what you've experienced, you don't come away as deflated from that. You're maybe better able to prepare for upcoming consultations, but that in itself is potentially the most beneficial thing about having hit this phase in life, is finding that there are other people out there who are able to share information and advice. Because so often we think that it's going to be a case of changing diet, changing lifestyle habits, introducing hormone replacement therapy, increasing the amount of exercise that we're doing. And while those things may work for some people, it's like everything else in diabetes, they won't work for absolutely everybody. But just knowing that there are other people out there who understand it, who hear what you're saying, who've gone through what you're saying, albeit in a different way and for different circumstances, that is such a powerful thing in itself. And it certainly equips you better, I think, to be able to face the day-to-day challenges and to open up the conversations with people that you need to be having those conversations with, to try alternative methods, alternative means of managing on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I think I'd agree. I don't think I'd even really thought about menopause really, which is sounds like a really silly thing to say, but certainly as a type one as well, I think I don't really have anyone else to talk to. So I'm really glad that I've been able to talk to you about this today and find out a bit more, and hopefully the information that we've discussed will help not only me but other people who hear what we've been talking about today.
And as I said earlier as well, like, the groups are open to anybody who is likely to experience or is currently experiencing perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause, because we have people within the group who have had surgical menopauses for different reasons. They've had hysterectomies or they've had oophorectomies. They've had their ovaries removed because of other healthcare complications or as a family planning method. People have these surgeries for a wide range of reasons. There's never just one reason why. But certainly we're more than happy to have people who haven't hit that stage in life yet come and talk to us and come and share with us as well, because it helps to build that community up, and it means that you can signpost as well anybody that you're encountering who's maybe 26 and has had a surgical menopause because of something abnormal within their uterus or something abnormal within their ovaries. So please do keep signposting people to us, because we're very welcome. We're very welcoming community. We're a very open community. And we are very keen to learn and share with other people as well.
Oh, that's great. Thanks, Dawny. I'll look forward to checking it out later on today and seeing what you guys are talking about.